Hey, it's Scott Petrick with another episode of the Brown Zone Coverage Podcast. The Browns open training camp on Saturday at the Greenbrier Resort in White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia, and I'm here. They practice four times and are off today before four more practices here. Then it's back to Berea in the Hall of Fame game. Here to discuss all things Browns, as always, is Dave Chudowski of GO, the WKYC Morning News. Hey, Chud.
Scott, yeah, I'm back in Cleveland. You're down there. So I got to tell you, I saw you Sunday on the Sports Tonight on Channel 3 with Nick Camino. Looking good, good information, nice hat. You
Thank
could
you.
tell that it was probably pretty hot there.
Yeah, you know what? It hasn't been brutal, but you know, it's in the sun, so it's been in the 80s for sure, and I think it's getting up to 90s the next few days. So it'll be hotter, and the Browns are practicing in the morning, but they go until like from 10:30 to 12-ish. So it'll be hot. I think that's part of the reason Kevin Stefanski. One of the reasons he wanted it down here, he likes the idea of it being hot. But yeah, they've had good weather. It's been sunny for the most part, hot. But yeah, I mean it's a nice setting. But like Kevin Stefanski said, it's in the middle of nowhere, and that's what he was looking for.
Yeah, so it's pretty much halftime right now, right? You said four practices in, four more to go.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They'll have eight total sessions down here, and we're at the halfway point. Which the way the collective bargaining agreement works. You can't practice for more than 4 days in a row. Players have a
Yeah.
mandated off day. Like the team can't schedule anything today for the players. It's all up to them. And then they come back for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, quick practice Sunday morning, and then fly back to Cleveland.
Okay. So that did you drive or did you
Yeah,
fly?
no, I drove. I drove.
What's the drive? How many
You
hours?
know what? It took. From the time we left Berea to the time we got to the hotel, just under six with one
Okay.
stop. So it's probably five and a half. There was some traffic at one of the toll booths that slowed everything down, but it's a good five and a
Okay.
half from Berea. Yeah.
Where did they fly out of, or where did they fly into and they're
Yeah.
flying out of?
Well, I think the Greenbrier is such a fancy place that there's a. I don't know if it's private or
Yeah.
just small, right? There's an airport like right down here, and Lewisburg is kind of the next town
Okay.
over. Or it's 12 minutes. It's a 12 minute drive from the hotel to the resort. So from the hotel we're staying at, the Writers to the resort. So
Okay.
there's an airport right there.
That makes sense. Yeah, okay. I figured. Yeah, I mean, they don't mess around. I know that traveling with the NFL, they didn't.
Right. I mean.
So yeah, they're not going to be
Oh
driving that.
no. No, I mean they flew down Saturday. Like they flew down Saturday and then
Yeah.
practiced, right? Like they weren't wasting any time. Yeah.
Yeah, right. So is it weird without fans? I mean, how do you feel about the environment and what they set out to do? Do you think they're accomplishing what they set out to do?
It's really interesting, Chud. It's certainly a different vibe, you know. And Joe Bitonio said that yesterday. He said, "We miss the fans, looking forward to getting back home." And I've watched plenty of practices without fans. Like when we go to mini camp and OTAs, there aren't fans. So that experience isn't unusual for me, but it is for a training camp, right? Like the first day of training camp has extra buzz because the fans are so excited. And that was missing. It's all football here, right? There's none of the extra stuff. It's all the Browns people and, a dozen or, maybe two dozen media. And that's about it. So, the vibe is different. I know that Stefanski, that's part of his thinking, right? Is that it's all football, cut down on the distractions. And it's too early to tell if that's having the desired impact, right? The practices have been really, I wanted to talk about this, Judd. Like he's really taking a slow ramp up with the intensity of practices. And part of that's, a collectively bargained thing where you can't put pads on for so many days. But most of it is they have, from the start of camp until the first regular season game, there were 50 days. That's a long time. He doesn't want to wear guys out. He wants to build up, right? So your body gets used to it. You're trying to avoid, the injuries, the soft tissue issues that come up, normally during training camp. He's trying to avoid all those things. So, for example, Saturday was a walkthrough. Sunday, They practiced, but there was no offense versus defense. Then Monday, you get the first offense versus defense, but it's not full speed. And then Tuesday, you got what was the first real practice. It felt like the first real practice of camp. It included some 11-on-11. It included 7-on-7. It included red zone 7-on-7. So you actually got some competitiveness going. Now, the next step is one-on-ones. We have not seen the corner versus the DB, the offensive line versus D-line. We're going to see that. We're going to see pads come on Friday and Saturday, and I think it'll start to feel more like a camp. Not that this hasn't, but it's been a slow ramp-up by design. And then the last part of it is, Chud, Kevin Stefanski came down here because he wanted to eliminate distractions, and he's hoping to improve the team chemistry, right? Because that was an issue last year. And it's tough to tell if that's going to have the desired impact, right? But it's just too early. But that's something that he's looking to get accomplished is, all right, do the guys, just from being around each other in this setting, secluded, do they form the bonds that will help them win games?
Yeah, really good perspective there. And again, they won't be in full pads until Friday. Is that right?
Yeah, I think when you come off an off day, you have to be in non-pads. So then they'll go pads Friday and then pads again Saturday. Yeah.
Okay. I'm having flashbacks back to when I put Sportscast together and I would try to decide what to lead with, what your second story would be. I mean, there's a lot of things to chew on here that we get to talk about today. So I was trying to decide what to start with. I was thinking Deshaun Watson, maybe the Haslam spoke the other day. I thought maybe that would be, but the thing I want to start with, I think partly because I want to just get it out of the way, but also because it was one of your top keys, and that's injuries. And the reason I bring that up is because, you start camp and you're like, oh boy, here we go. Amari Cooper and Marquise Goodwin, right off the bat, we're talking about, that receiver room taking a big hit.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought that up, Chud. Because, you kind of in it every day, and, oh, he's out again, blah, blah, blah. But if you take a step back, that is a big storyline from the start of camp. Start with Goodwin, right? We get down here on Friday. The veterans report and the Browns announced that he's on the non-football illness list. And that piqued my interest, right? What's going on here? And then you find out it's blood clots in his legs and lungs, which is scary. So he's not practicing, and they don't know if he'll play at all, right? He's 32 years old. I'm not a doctor. The blood clots have to clear up, right? And there's only so much you can do about that he can't play with the blood clots. And it's not like you can just spend more time in the hot tub or cold tub, right? There's not much you can do. They just have to go away. I'm sure they're doing everything they can, but they don't know if he's going to play. And, let's assume that he's healthy from a personal standpoint, right? That he's going to go on, his life's okay. From a football perspective, you can look at it as, oh, well, he was only going to be the number four guy on the depth chart. That's true. And he's new to the team. You didn't know exactly what kind of impact he would have. Having said that, we talked about it last year. We talked about it in the offseason, Chud. They needed more explosion in that passing game. They knew that. They needed more speed, and that's why they went out and got Marquise Goodwin. So you could say he was going to be number four on the depth chart, but they were going to use him to stretch the field. They were going to try to scare defenses with him. And without that speed element of Goodwin, depending on if and when he comes back, they're going to have to figure out another way to build that element into the offense, whether that's Anthony Schwartz, right, who's the fastest guy on the roster but has had no impact in 2 years and opens training camp on the injured list with a hamstring that affected him in minicamp. He's the next guy. He's the next fastest guy. But, there's not a whole lot of optimism that all of a sudden the light's going to go on for Anthony Schwartz. So how do you come up with that? And that's something they're going to have to work through if Goodwin doesn't come back. If Schwartz also either doesn't come back or doesn't, he'll come back from a hamstring injury, but doesn't make the team, right? And then on top of that, now they have Amari Cooper, and he tweaked something. They say it's a minor tweak. He could be back on the field as early as Thursday. I don't think that's a long-term concern at all. But when you look at out there at the receiver corner, you don't have your number one. You don't have your number four. You don't have Schwartz. Michael Woods, the second last year, you know, a draft pick a year ago, is out with a torn Achilles. You know, you're a little thin at, you know, you're a little thin at that spot right now. And the Goodwin thing could be a long-term, he could have a long-term effect.
Yeah, he's there though, right?
Yeah, he's there. He's watching. So is everybody. Schwartz, Woods, they're all there. But, you know, now you have Elijah Moore and Donovan Peoples-Jones are 1-2. It's more time for David Bell, who, if Goodwin does not come back before week one, I thought Bell would make the roster. Now he's a lock to make the roster, in my opinion, if Goodwin isn't here. Last year, third-round draft pick. But he gets bumped up. Rookie Cedric Tillman gets bumped up the depth chart. You start looking at a guy like Jalen Darden, a short, fast, quick guy. Does he start getting more reps, right? Like, those are the kind of dominoes when you're missing guys, especially with Amari Cooper not out there, right? If Cooper's out there, then you go Cooper, Moore, Peoples-Jones, and you love your top three. But that's been the position area most affected.
Yeah. So, Scott, every day I wake up at 2:30 in the morning and I have a minor tweak of something. What is the minor tweak? Do we know?
I don't know. They've not told us. We have not talked to Cooper since it happened. And, you know, he left practice Sunday. And like I said, Sunday wasn't even a really much of a practice. But he walked off in the middle, went inside. And I've seen him. Like, he's been on the field the last couple of days. He's been working on the side. And he doesn't have anything wrapped, right? So it doesn't look like an obvious hamstring, right, or an obvious shin or calf. So I can't tell you exactly what it is. Andrew Berry, the GM, said it was not related to the core muscle surgery that Cooper had in February and the core muscle injury that really slowed him for that last month of the season last year. So if it's not related to that and it's just, let's say he felt something in his quad, right, and just didn't want to push it, that's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah. So bottom line is Cooper won't be limited in camp by the core muscle surgery. Is that accurate?
Yes. And he told us that. He said that was not going to affect him at all. And then he has this other thing. But like, you know, I mean, Chuck, we're still 7 weeks or 6.5 weeks until the open, right? So like, I'm not worried about Cooper. It's just the bottom of the depth of the receiving core. That's where now there's question marks.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, let's get into Deshaun Watson. He spoke the other day, and it sounds like he's in a pretty good spot. You know, it's funny, and I don't know if it's funny, but I told everyone on the set the other morning during commercial break during the show, and, you know, we had some Deshaun Watson sound on, and I just said, hey, I go, this is kind of what happens. You know, you don't hear as much negative with him. You don't hear, and I know it's still out there. There's still people that are angry. I know it's there, but I've always said this, and you've said it too, I believe. You know, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but we've always kind of talked about it's not necessarily that time heals all wounds in this situation, but as you get further away from the incident and them signing him, you start to hear less and less, and then you start seeing the reports that he's comfortable, and then the Haslam said, you know, they're, you know, I don't want to put, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but they're very happy with where he's at, basically. But do you kind of sense that as, like, as we're getting a little further away, you know, the noise isn't as loud, I guess?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Chad. I think you nailed it. And I have mixed feelings about that, right? Because I don't ever want to minimize what happened, right, with all the accusations. And with him accepting the 11-game suspension and settling the civil lawsuits, right? There's something there. And, you know, I know people have different opinions about it, but there's something there. So I don't want to just say, okay, it's a year later, all that stuff doesn't matter, right? There are still women, in my opinion, that are affected by that. There are still victims of sexual assaults that were triggered by the Watson situation, by the Browns trading for him, all of that. And I don't think that just disappears because he feels better a year later. You know, having said that, the reality is that has been pushed to the back burner. There's two remaining civil lawsuits that nothing is happening with them. They're not closed, but nothing is happening. I checked the dockets the other day, right? There's no threat of a suspension. he does get to take every rep that he wants. When last year he didn't, because you had to get Jacoby Brissett prepared to play. He gets to be around his teammates all the time. He doesn't have to think about, man, do I take the settlement with the league? Do I take a 6-game suspension? Do I take an 11-game suspension, right? All those things that dominated training camp in the offseason a year ago, those are no longer the case from a football perspective. So I think it's fair to write about that. I think it's fair to talk about that. And I think you did a good job bringing it up. It's, you know, you have the football world and you have the other world. And in the football world, Deshaun Watson is able to try to get past all that, maybe shook the rust off the last 6 games of last year, and is ready to go. Now, he also feels in a good headspace off the field, right? He said that. It's not only on the field, it's off the field, but they're connected, right? He said, yes, my focus is so much sharper on football because I don't have the other things to worry about. I find it kind of a difficult story to balance because I don't, you know, it's his vision or his version of what's going on, right? But you tie that into Kevin Stefanski saying he comes across him in the locker room studying film even before he's supposed to be a training camp. He's just there. And right, that kind of speaks to where he is. He's a gym rat. He's a football junkie. His teammates know how committed he is to this team. So you have that aspect of it, and it's all tied together. I think where I push back a little bit is when, you know, the Haslam say, he's always been humbler. He's always been humble, but he's even humbler right now, right? And you go through things and you come out the other side stronger. Like, you know, it feels like you're kind of whitewashing a situation a little bit. You know what I mean? And I get it. And I get that's their perspective. And I get that, you know, they're invested in this guy. And when they traded for him, they thought they did all their due diligence and they thought it was okay to take him on. So, you know, I just think it's a complicated issue and it's nuanced. But from a bottom line perspective is Deshaun Watson feels really comfortable where he is as a football player and as a person. And so do the Browns. And if you're a fan that's not put off by Deshaun Watson's history, then I think that's good for you too, because it gives him the best chance to succeed. And we've talked about it a million times, Judd. The Browns need him to succeed to get to where they want to go.
Yeah. So we're going to kind of intertwine these topics of Watson and Haslam and kind of mix and match here, because they kind of go together in the fact that, you know, Watson's saying he's hungry for success. The Haslams are saying, you know, they're very, and I'm paraphrasing, but, and you could talk more to it because you were there for the direct quotes. But when listening to three things stood out to me with the Haslams, basically from afar here in Cleveland. And when you combine the Haslams with the Watson situation, you know, Jimmy sounded like he's just totally happy with where Watson's at and how he's grown in the past year. Now, Scott, tell us a little more about that. And also, do you buy it? Do you feel like he just has to say that? I mean, what else is he going to say? I mean, did he give enough reasons to prove to us that he's changed?
Yeah, no, that's an interesting point, Chud. I do believe that the Haslams believe Watson is in a better place. And I believe Watson believes he's in a better place. Like, I don't doubt that at all. And, you know, I'm looking at one of the quotes. We'd be remiss if we didn't say how proud we were of Deshaun, Jimmy says. And he's talking about the press conference Deshaun Watson had given the day before. He's come a long way in the last year. He's worked extremely hard on being a better person, a better man, a better teammate. I think all of us have gone through ups and downs in life, and I think you learn a lot more when you go through the downs. You see a different Deshaun Watson today than you saw a year ago. You know, Watson talked about taking the NFL-mandated therapy seriously. D. Haslam said he continues to go to counseling. So I think that's a positive sign regardless, right? No matter how you look at it, I think that's a positive sign. And, you know, I try to be sympathetic to everyone, right? And the alleged victims in these situations. And I guess what the part that sticks with me is when Watson says something like, the whole situation changed me. It's a situation where to lock on myself, really know who I am surrounding myself with, and just really who's going to be there and support me even when I'm at my lowest point. So I get that he was at his lowest point, but when you talk about like who you surrounded yourself with, like to me that feels like you're shifting the blame a little bit, right? We still haven't heard a whole lot of contrition from Watson. And you can argue that that's because he doesn't think he did anything wrong. You can argue because there's still lawsuits out there, so you got to be careful about, you know, what kind of guilt, you know, if you say you're guilty or apologize or anything like that. But I think the people that are upset with the Browns' acquisition of Watson and continue to be, I think that's where the divide is. There's not much of a sense of contrition from Deshaun Watson.
So on the field, and again, they're not even in pads till Friday, but just, you know, with your own eyes, is there anything that you see different with Watson from last year that excites you? Anything that for us here in Cleveland, yeah, hasn't really gotten a chance to see him? You know, anything that you can pinpoint and you're like, yeah, you know, we got to hear about this.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, we started talking about it in OTAs and minicamp, Judd, where he had a really good practice. Alex Van Pelt, the coordinator, said, you know, he got goosebumps and our hair stood up on his arms, like, because he made a couple throws like that or made a big time throw in the red zone. And, you know, first of all, even last year, right, he still ran like one of the best quarterbacks in the league, like athletically. He throws it with such ease. Most of the time, he's accurate. Like throughout his history, he's a really accurate quarterback. And you see that, like, ball placement's good. He's got the arm to make all the throws. He can run. So all that's always been there. Now it's how does it translate to play in and play out, right? And I think you see more consistency from him this year with the throwing. And just because, like I said, his mind, I think his mind really is clearer. You know, from an athletic standpoint, they spent a lot of time early in practices working on the option, Judd. And, yeah, I don't know how much we're going to see it, but we're going to see it, right? I don't know if it's twice a game. I don't know if it's five times a game. But, you know, and that's something you need to practice. But we see that, right? And it's Watson and Chubb going down the line. It's Watson and Moore going down the line. We see RPOs. You know, the things we talked about, where you see design quarterback runs. Like, that's an element to the game that Stefanski didn't have in his offense. And even if he's second in the last six games last year, you only saw shades of it. And you're going to see more. Like, it's going to be – I think it's going to stand out to fans when they either camp or preseason or when we get to the regular season, the differences in the offense. And then from a throwing perspective, there are just throws that you see that pop, you know. And not that every quarterback doesn't have those at some point. Like, Baker would make throws. And Baker had a good arm, right? So – I'm not saying he didn't, Derek, you know, I mean, a lot of guys have good arms, but there was a throw yesterday and, you know, you know, you've watched a ton of football practices, Judd, and you're sitting there and you're watching and it's okay. You're trying to pick up these little nuances and all of a sudden there's a play and it's against the defense. And I think it was Donovan Peoples-Jones runs a deep in route and the linebacker drops and the safety's behind Peoples-Jones. And Watson throws this ball over the linebacker and head of the safety. I don't know, let's say it's 35 yards downfield, right on the money. And the guy instantly go, boom, you write it down. It just registered because it was such a precise throw and a difficult throw. And we're seeing more and more of those. And that's what gets you excited if you're Kevin Stefanski, right? I can call this play and my quarterback is going to make such a big time throw. And I'm going to look up just because I put asterisks next to it. Four deep cross 11 over linebacker Matthew Adams, right? Like that was a big time throw. Now they're not all like that. And the next two were incompletions and they struggled a little bit in the red zone, but you are seeing more and more, I would say good plays from Watson.
All right, Scott, all the big guns talked this week, Haslam's, Stefanski, Barry, let's continue on with the Haslam's because we intertwine that with Watson. But let's get away from Watson and the other big thing from Cleveland that I saw that, well, there's two things that made headlines. The one that really, you know, was interesting is how he kind of, I don't know if you'd say put on the spot, but, you know, when talking about playoffs and this or that, you know, I guess Jimmy didn't really want to say it's now or never, right? I mean, he kind of didn't want to say that, hey, it's playoff or bust. He didn't want to say that, you know, jobs are on the line. Is that accurate to say?
Yeah, I think that's exactly correct, Chud. And, you know, He did say that, right? And I think there's people at home that could be, well, of course he's not going to say it's now or never, it's playoff or bust. But first of all, this is the opportunity, right? We talked to him right at the start of training camp. They kind of set the tone for the season. They could say whatever they want, right? They could put pressure on Stefanski and Barry if they wanted to. They choose not to. And the other part, which is fine, and I think it's probably the right thing to do. The other part of that is the Haslams have owned the team for about 11 years. They've said stupid stuff before, right? Like, remember the year that they said, we're not going to blow it up? And then they blew it up, right? So I think they've learned to not make any broad proclamations, that it's a long season, stuff can happen. So they were careful to say it's not now or never. Stuff could happen. But they also said expectations are high. And they expect this team to be really good. Now, does that necessarily have to be a playoff appearance? No. And that's, I guess, that's where you're drawing the line. And I think it's a legitimate line to draw. Because you could say, hey, if this team doesn't go to the playoffs, it's three straight years not making the playoffs. Some owners would say, hey, that means it's a change, right? A change needs to come because we need to get to the playoffs. The Haslams are not ready to say that. I think in part because now they like the stability, right? After so much change early in their tenure, they like the stability. I believe it when they say they really like Kevin Stefanski. They think he's good. They really think Andrew Berry's going to be a big-time GM if he's not already, right? Like, they believe in these guys. You can throw Paul DePodesta, the chief strategy officer, into the mix. They believe in this group. So I don't think their default is to move on, right? I think the default is let's make it work with these guys. Therefore, if you go 9-8 and 10-7 and miss the playoffs because you miss a kick in the last game, like, does that mean you change coaches, right? Like, I just think they want to leave themselves some wiggle room in case the season doesn't get end in the playoffs, but they don't want to blow everything up. They don't want to make significant changes. So I think they did a good job handling that way. And they also said, yes, expectations are high. At some point, we're all going to be based on our records. Like, I think they said a lot of good things while expressing a lot of support for their coach and GM.
Yeah, I wonder if, you know, obviously they've learned over the years. Maybe we thought that because they were in the Steelers organization, you thought he learned more from that organization, right? But I wonder if, you know, being part of the soccer team in Columbus and owning that group has helped them a little bit too.
Yeah, that's interesting. And, you know, now it's only been a little bit, but now they have the ownership of the Bucks, right? They have part of the Milwaukee Bucks. So maybe,
yeah,
they
look what happened to them.
Well, right. But but you're around a team that, or owners that won a championship. Maybe, you know, I think it is a learning curve. I think they probably were too slow on that learning curve. But, you know, maybe they are starting to pick up from whether it's other NFL owners, if it's NBA, if it's MLS. I think that's a legitimate point, Judd.
Yeah, I just feel like listening to him talk, though, I just feel like he wants to say other stuff, but he's just not, because it's just so in his DNA and nature to do so, right?
Oh, yeah, I would not argue with you there, right, at all, right? Like, yeah, in a private moment, right, in a private moment, would he say, yeah, we got to go to the playoffs? Yeah, but, you know, like, yeah. Right? Yeah, but, you know, whether it's him, his wisdom or his people's wisdom, right, the PR people telling him what to say, or, you know, coaching him up, whatever it is. He's at least, you know, I think he knows better.
Yeah. If it was Petrak and Haslam on the golf course and you weren't a beat writer and, you know, you guys were just best friends, I think it would be a different thing.
I agree. Right. Yeah. He might have told the guy next to him on the sideline yesterday, yeah, they better win this year, right?
Yeah. Well, just so this doesn't get too long and we can move on, just give everyone a quick update on, you know, what they said about Cleveland and not leaving Cleveland and the stadium and all that, just in case anyone hasn't heard.
Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is the only thing they said is for sure is we're talking about the future of the stadium. The only thing for sure is they're not going to leave Northeast Ohio. Now, they continue to say their number one goal is to renovate the stadium as it is, and the lease runs up at the end of 2028. They want to renovate the stadium, and that's a $1 billion-plus project. But they want it to be part of a bigger lakefront renovation, right, which the city's been and the county's been talking about for decades and decades. They want the land bridge that crosses over the shoreway, you know, the Route 2 over there. like it's a, they have all these visions, and it's a land bridge, it's development of the lakefront, and it's a renovated stadium in the middle of all the development. That's the that's what they continue to say is the number one goal. However, there's been a bunch of obstacles politically. I think the state took funding away from it was going to be in the budget. Now it's not for the land bridge. The city and county, I think, are bickering. Like, there's just a whole lot of political stuff going on. And the Browns are in the middle, and all they know is that they can't live in this stadium for much longer, whether it needs to be renovated significantly or they got to build a new stadium somewhere else. And if they do that, you got to find a site, you know, and they're not going to, it's not that the Browns are going to pay, the Haslams aren't going to pay for a new stadium by themselves. You still have to find funding. But maybe you take it out of the lakefront development and it's just its own entity. Okay, here's a new stadium, plop down somewhere. Let's figure out how to finance this. So I felt like the Haslams left the door way more open for a new stadium than they had been. They'd been pushing pretty hard for the renovation, and it felt like, hey, stuff's going on politically. We might have to adjust. We might wind up with a new stadium somewhere else.
I guess the thing that hit me on this, just, you know, a lot of times I just, you know, you turn your head and there's coach speak or there's things you just don't pay attention. All of a sudden you hear something, you're like, wait, what? You know, like, but when he made the comment and the headline came out, we're not leaving Cleveland. Like, I didn't even know that was like on the table. Like, I was kind of like, wait a minute, of course you're not leaving Cleveland. Like, or am I wrong? Like, I mean, I know the stadium's a deal, but that was kind of weird, right?
Yeah, it is weird. Like, I tried to phrase it as the only thing, like the only certainty is they're not going in. Right, everything else is up for grabs. But that's always, like, they've always said that. Like, I don't think that was anything new. They've always said that. I just think it was the way it got phrased. It definitely jumped out, right? And I think it's important to report and say because of what happened in 96 or 95, right? Like, the Browns did move. So people need to be reassured that just because the stadium lease expires, the Haslams aren't moving the team. But everything outside of that, right now feels uncertain.
Okay, that's good. All right, let's move on now to Stefanski. Nothing really jumped out majorly with him, just from afar. Up close, anything big that he had to say that, you know, maybe X's and O's or, you know, anything that we need to know?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you know, I mean, we talk to him every day, but there's nothing – to me, there's been nothing significant from him except – like we talked about the ramping up of the practices. He doesn't get too specific with how the offense is going to change, right? Like, that to me, that's one of the major things that we've talked about. That is one of the storylines, is just how is this offense going to change? And he's not either willing, well, he's, of course he's able to. So yeah, he's not willing to give those details, right? Like, he doesn't want a blueprint out there. Yeah, we're going to run the option 8 times a game. We're going to go 3 wides all the time. Like I think there's going to be an element of surprise when you get to week 1 against Cincinnati. And I think that's one of the things that they enjoy, is that the offense is going to be different. They have a new defensive coordinator. They might be able to sneak up on some people early in the year.
Andrew Berry, Perry on Winfrey. I saw that he said it was the proper time to cut him, right?
Yeah, and I disagree with that. You know, Perry and Winfrey had the incident where he was arrested in Houston in April. Violence with the woman he was dating. It wound up getting thrown out because he did I always screw up the phrasing, but he did the program, the diversion program, so the charge got thrown out. But there was an incident there. He had maturity issues throughout his rookie season. I thought that would have been the right time to move on from Winfrey. The Browns gave him one more chance, and then he has another incident, is a suspect in an alleged aggravated robbery incident, and that's when they move on from him. You know, I disagreed with Andrew Berry. I thought they should have moved on. If they had, then you don't have this other negative attention drawn to your organization by this guy. But Berry said it was, you know, he thought it was still the right time. He said he did not regret waiting to cut Winfrey.
Anything else from Andrew Berry before we move on?
Nothing crazy. Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, Andrew, he's a good guy. He gives you answers.
He's not super talkative, right? You know, I think he agrees that Watson's in a better spot. But yeah, you know, I thought that was part of it. I think my biggest headline from Barry was the Winfrey stuff. Yeah.
All right. We're going to move on now. And Scott, I'm going to have to put you on a time limit here because, we have had so much to talk about. And let's be honest, I have to believe on a day off, not that you're off because you're taping this. This is Wednesday, and I'm sure you're writing. But on a day where you don't have to go to the field, you're going to go to the other grass, the greens. I got to believe you got a tee time set up.
That would be correct. I have some writing to do, but there is a tee time set up.
All right. Since you have a tee time and I have a bedtime because I got to get a nap, yes. Let's keep these next ones because I want to hit a few more topics, yes. But let's keep them to like a minute.
Yes.
All right. Yep. We got a lot of people that talked. Nick Chubb talking about the running back situation. That was definitely interesting.
Yeah, Chubb, that was when I made my notes of everything I wanted to hit. That was one of the one of the big things I wanted to hit. Chubb has never talked that openly to us as reporters. He's passionate about this issue. He was on that Zoom call of some of the top running backs in the league about the cratering running back market. And the line that stood out was, I'm paraphrasing, I know it could happen to me. And that's just the reality. Chubb is, in my opinion, the best running back in the league, but he's getting paid $10 million plus. I think it's 12.2. The Browns could move on from him. Next year, but after 2023, there's an out in the contract where they could save, I think it's $10 million on the cap. And they're up against the cap. I wouldn't say that I think that's the move they will make, but it's certainly on the table, and Chubb knows that. And it's just a fascinating, huge issue in the NFL. And the Browns, where it relates to the Browns, is Nick Chubb, because everybody loves him, teammates, coaches, fans. But will it come a point where the team just decides we can't pay a guy at that position that much money? I don't think it's coming right now. I don't even think it's coming next year. But there will probably be a point. And the fact that it isn't coming yet speaks to the importance of Nick Chubb. Because I think if Andrew Barry and Dee Podesta took a step back in their organizational chart, their philosophy, there's no way they would pay a running back as much as they're paying Chubb. But he is so rare that they make the exception.
I gave you an extra 30 seconds because you were so passionate
about it. Thank you, Chuck.
Yeah, I did because it was but we're going to keep you to a minute here on Myles Garrett. But it just seems like with Garrett, I don't think there's any huge pointers. But there was something I saw that – and I think it was you that I saw something about his leadership. And, yeah. And that just always seems to be a topic with him every year.
It is. And, you know, sometimes it's the, he's getting older, you ready for more leadership? This happened to be – Malik Jackson, his former teammate, defensive tackle in 2021, went on NFL Network and said he thought Miles could be better in that area. He said, everybody sees him on the field, but in meeting rooms, guys look to you, take the bull by the horns, be a better leader. And Garrett objected to that a little bit. He said, I think I am doing a good job as a leader. Yes, I'm maturing. Sometimes it takes a while as a leader. I'm maturing as a leader. Sometimes it takes a while to grow into that. But, I thought Miles did a good job handling it. You know, he was really complimentary of Malik Jackson. But it's always with Miles, right? Can he take that next step? In whatever, on the field, off the field, can he take that next step? Because you just feel like there's so much potential that is still left there, even though he's a two-time All-Pro, four-time Pro Bowler, 16 sacks in back-to-back seasons.
All right, nice job. Way to stay on deadline there.
Thank you.
Greg Newsome, this one hurts you. The Northwestern situation, I know, and he talked about that with the that's a rough deal over there.
It's just getting started with all the lawsuits and the allegations. And you know, you had Pat Fitzgerald, the longtime coach and the icon. He played at Northwestern. He's a year younger than me. College Football Hall of Famer. So yeah, it's a terrible scandal. It puts a terrible light on the university. From Newsom's perspective, because he tweeted early, like, I'm not going to go back to Evanston. I'm paraphrasing. And I never saw some of the stuff people are talking about, because there's also a racism component from the coaches. You know, they were asking some of the black players to cut their hair are the allegations and act kind of more like, you know, the Wildcat way, which was perceived as acting like you're more white, you know, like a white, you know, following the coaches, like, you know, this all-American white way. Newsom said he didn't experience any of that. And that's what he tweeted. Yesterday, he kind of backed off a little bit and said, hey, I'm trying to respect everyone. It's a troubling situation. I'm always going to be tied to Northwestern. It's my alma mater. So I think he realized that he maybe was too aggressive in the original tweets, but said he didn't see any hazing, and he has texted Pat Fitzgerald because I think he still supports Fitzgerald.
Wow, that is that's brutal. That whole situation.
Oh, it's terrible. It's terrible. Yeah. We could do a whole pod on the hazing situation, and I just don't understand it. I don't understand how it's become sexualized like it is, and how it seems to be rampant from high schools to colleges. I don't understand it.
Yeah. Well, the last thing I was going to ask you, but we can save this for the next one, unless you want to hit it real quick, was just JOK. I know that that he spoke, and that was a big topic. Anything on him before we go?
No, I mean, just real quick, he says he's added more mass. The key is to stay healthy, and the team thinks he needs to be bigger to stay durable, right? And it feels like he gets his weight drops, he gets smaller, that leads to injuries. They need him to stay healthy because he has not had the impact he should have through 2 years.
All right. Well, that was a pretty beefy podcast. I'm done unless you have anything else you want to share with us.
No, we're good. I appreciate it, Chip. But yeah, you know, you get into training camp, there's a lot to talk about. So I'm glad we're able to do this. We'll try to get this in next week. You talk about busy. Next week, we'll have camp back in Berea for, I think it's only one day, but then you get the Hall of Fame, right? So it's going to be another busy week, so hopefully we can fit one in.
Yeah, we'll be live down there next Thursday morning. The GO team will be live getting ready for the game. And Channel 3, we're going to be doing, I think our 5 o'clock news in the afternoon is going to be live down there every day. Nice. We're going to have, I mean, I know our sports department's been doing a ton with Joe Thomas and getting ready for that game, so...
Yeah.
A lot of coverage on Channel 3 when it comes to the Hall of Fame game and Joe Thomas.
Yeah, I mean, that's great, right? We got the Hall of Fame thing Thursday night. There's actually a Jim Brown memorial service Thursday afternoon. And then you have Joe Thomas's induction or enshrinement on Saturday. So I'm going to be in camp a lot. I'm actually, when we get done with this pod, I'm going to text Joe because I need to talk to him one more time for a story. So hopefully I can get a hold of him before next week. So
Hey, here's a little little trivia for you. Not to put you on the spot, but I am. Do you know how many, after this class goes in, do you know how many total members of the Hall of Fame there will be?
Oh, my gosh. I'm just going to take a wild guess. 350.
Not bad. 371.
Well, that's pretty good.
And Thomas is 369.
Interesting.
Right. Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah, I had no idea.
Well, that's what I'm here for, those last-minute fun facts.
Yeah, that is good. That's pretty good. The rapid fire and the fun facts.
Yeah. All right. Well, good luck on the golf course today. Yeah.
Thanks. All right. Thank you, Chud, as always. I appreciate it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. You can read everything I do at brownzone.com, and we'll do another Zone coverage podcast hopefully next week. Thanks a lot.